There are 24 prokim on Masechah Shabbos. So the beginning of Perek Shmoneh Shrotzim, the Mishnah states that there's some halacha involved that one causes a Kabbalah, that one causes a black and blue mark. The Mishnah. So there are three pshatim in the Rishonim what the malacha is. The Rashi's first pshat is that it's an Isur of Tzoveya. Rashi has a second pshat that Tesis picks up on Tesis' maskin that it's an Isur of Shochet, Tilis and Shoma. And the third pshat is the Rambam that the Isur is Disho. The Tzoveya pshat is problematic. Tesis points out because there is a Gemara in Fulin. The Gemara says that even in an animal that doesn't have a thick skin, the Gemara says there are some shrots m'sheyesh lahem or and some shrots m'sheyesh lahem or. Some of them have thick skin, some of them have thin skin. So those who have thin skin, and you're not chayiv mishum chovel if he throws a black and blue mark, but if you mosi the dam, if the dam comes out, then there will be a malacha. So if the malacha involved is Tzoveya, so why is there any tzia? The dam comes out. So that's what prompted Tosfos and the Rambam to give their shita. That if it's nitzra hadam, the malacha involved is not so much the tzia, it's because that dam is dead. And if you cut an artery and you cause blood to flow, so that dam for sure is dead. And if you have a thick-skinned animal and you give a clap, and you cause a black and blue mark, so that dam is dead, so that's the equivalent to removing the dam, which is either shochet or dosh, one or the other. And if it's a thin-skinned animal, then the dam, the nitzra dam, is meaningless because it's going to be chayzer the nivla, it's going to return back into the system. Yeah. How does one understand this idea that it should be disha? We understand a little bit. The problem disha shalom bigdule karka. Okay, so that's the old issue. Is a behemoth considered gedule karka or not? Milking the cow. Rashi said that milking the cow is a malacha of disha, and Tosfos picked on Rashi. How can it be disha? If there's no gedisha min atar shalom bigdule karka, so milking cows only the rabbanon, and causing the bleeding is only the rabbanon, it wouldn't appear, so it would appear that is their right. So that was Tosfos kasha on Rashi by milking the cows, and that was the kasha the Nosi Kelim having the Rambam by the Choyvel Bechavir. So Tosfos claims, and that's what it says. And the Yerushalmi, like Tosfos says, it says that the malach involved is in Tilis Nisham. What kind of Tilis Nisham? Tilis Nisham is when the organism is dead. Here the organism is alive, just caused a little bleeding. So Tosfos came up with their big chiddush that the Pasuk says, Chumash ki Adam hu ha-nefesh. What exactly does that mean, ki Adam hu ha-nefesh? So the Pasuk Pshat seems to be that the blood circulation, by definition, is what keeps animals alive. And therefore the dam represents the life. And Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he discusses one who wants to be yotzei tefillin, to put tefillin on the left arm which is paralyzed. Can one fulfill the mitzvah? So he writes that his father, Moshe Feinstein's father, was paralyzed before he died, a few months before he died, and he continued to put on tefillin on his left arm, so he thinks that that was correct. He writes that he thinks that it wouldn't be correct if the arm would be the blood circulation would have stopped, and gangrene means that the blood circulation stopped and the arm is already, even though it's still attached to the body, it's rotting away, it's already decomposing, like when a person dies, different limbs compose at different rates of decomposition, but the limb that has gangrene, that there's no blood circulating to it, is already decomposing now. It's the same rate of decomposition that it would if the whole organism would be dead. So Moshe says, if there's no blood circulating to that organ, so that organ is considered dead. So the definition of life is ki adam hu anefesh. When the blood circulates, he doesn't quote this pasuk, he doesn't quote this tesis, he quotes a different gemara. He quotes a gemara Maseches Choris, in the middle of the sugyas of Mumin, middle of Bechoris, there are about 25 blots that deal with Mumin by Behemoth and Mumin by Kohanim. A Kohen Baal Mumin is possible to be Makar Kabbanis, and a Behemoth Balas Mumin is possible to offer on the Mizbeah. By Ophos, the Gemara says, Tamas Vizachas, but Behemoth saying Tamas Vizachas, but Ophos. There's no din that you need a Tomim by an Oph. A Baal Mumin is kosher. By Mumin by Behemoth is not kosher, by Mumin by Oph is kosher. So there's no din of tamas by oath. Then there's no din of zachus, means, let's say, an ola has to be dafke a zachor, and a chatas has to be dafke in a cave. A shlomim can be either a zachor or a cave. So let's say by oath, there is no shlomim. There's only chatas oath and there's olas oath. There's no pesach by oath. There's no shlomim by oath. The only thing you have is chatas oath and you have olas oath. So the chatas oath doesn't have to be in a cave, and the olas oath doesn't have to be a zachor. The Gemara knows that there is a difference between a male and a female bird. The one lays the eggs and the other one doesn't. They're two different kinds of birds. In the mitzvah shiloh hakan, you only fulfill with the mother, not with the father. And half of the day, the father's sitting on the egg, not the mother. So you got to make sure when you do shiloh hakan that you're sending away shalech v'shalach ha'saim. Send away the father, you're not yotzei. You have to send away dafke the mother. So the Gemara knows that there is a male and a female bird. The Gemara means say there's no psul of an ola. If you bring an ola, it has to be dafke zocher. Bring a chatas, it has to be dafke in a keva. By chatas of an ola self, it can be either way. It doesn't make a difference.
Maybe I was on that misunderstanding, but does it say that both of them either have to be male or have to be female when we bring 110?
I don't remember. Could be. I don't know. I don't think so. Some of the Achrayim have a Chiddush, which is also not explicit in the Mishnah. When you bring one ken where it's a unit, one is a Chatzosayt, one is an Olosayt, so they should both be the same min. Either both Torah or both Ben Yoyna. You can't bring one a Torah and one a Ben Yoyna. That's what the Yoyer Kino writes in the back, and Rav Avila Soloveitchik thinks that that's correct in his Sefer on the Rambam. But this I don't remember, that they both have to be the same. Both The Ramosha Feinstein quotes this from the Gemara in Bechoris, that the blood circulation is determines whether any given organ is alive or dead. The Gemara says even though there's no psula balmum by ofos, but there is a psula mechusar eivah. We discussed such a related din. Even though by bnei noach, if a nochri wants to bring a korban to the Beis Hamikdash lagavoa, so we're permitted to accept it. The Chumash says if a nochri wants to bring korbanos, if he wants to bring for avodah zarah, we won't accept in the Beis Hamikdash. But if the nochri brings a korban lagavoa in the Beis Hamikdash, we have to make sure that it doesn't have any mum at all. But if the nochri wants to make his own boma and offer korbanos lagavoa, so then the Gemara says he's permitted to be makriv a balmum, and the Beis Hamikdash we wouldn't accept it. But if he wants to make his own private boma, he's not prohibited from being makriv shutechutz. And he's permitted to be makriv a balmum, provided that it's not a mechusar eiver. If it's a mechusar eiver, then it's aser. That's what we discussed a little bit. Tyson says, son of a dezara. And Dav Ches, what do you mean it's aser? What's in the Sheva Mitzvah ben Enoyah? That he's not allowed to bring a carbon that's a mechusar eiver? Which aver is the eiver on? So Tyson discussed that a little bit. So you see that just like by Yoifas, by us, there's no psula balmum, but there is a psula mechusar eiver. So by Bnei Noach is a similar thing on all karbanas that they bring. There's no psula balmum if he brings it on his own personal bama. And if he brings it in the Beis Hamikdash, we won't accept it if it's a balmum. But if he brings it on his own bama, that's okay. But he's not allowed to bring a mechusar eiver. So the Gemara, in the middle of the discussion of mechusar eiver, develops a notion that if you have a behemah or an oaf, it doesn't make a difference. The din of mechusar eiver applies to behemah also. Even if you have a hechetimtze, where the animal is not a balmum, but if it'll be mechusar eiver, it'll still be possible. How can that be? If it's missing a toe, if it's missing an eye, so it's not a balmum. So why do you have to come on to mechusar eiver? So the Gemara talks about, what if it's an eiver hapnimi? What if one of the evarim of the behemah that's missing is not on the outside? Everything on the outside is beautiful. It's nishkin balmum, but the behemah is mechusar eiver on the inside. So maybe that'll be a psula mechusar eiver, even though there's no psula balmum. Balmum depends on what it looks like on the outside. So the Gemara in the discussion of this din of mechusar eiver, so the Gemara assumes that Dava Pasha, that not only does it apply if the behemah or the oaf is literally missing the organ, even if the eiver is there, but we know that the blood circulation has stopped to that eiver in an irreversible fashion. Sometimes you can tie a tourniquet around the person's arm, and the blood circulation stops. You're going to say it's not yotzei tefillin if he puts a tefillin on his arm. No. It's only if the blood circulation has stopped in an irreversible fashion. Then it's considered dead. That organ is considered dead. So that's what Tosfos develops the notion here, that the pasuk says a chumish ki adam ul hanefesh. So the definition of life or death has to do with the circulation of the blood. So if you cause chavola, if you cause some of the blood to flow from the body to be lost, or if you cause a black and blue mark in the thick skinned animal, and that blood is not going to return back, that blood is dead blood. So that's also a form of mechusar ba'ei, but the whole blood system is still, it's the whole blood circulation is still functioning. So Tosfos throws in a phrase malikot lekula, malikot lepalga. So we mentioned that Rashi later on quotes that from Maseches Nida. The Gemara says that benegia to dam. The dam is considered one of the zayin mashkim as machsha lekabel tuma. So the Gemara learns that dam odom is also considered a mashke. As it says in Nevuas Bilam HaRosha, it says V'dam Chalolim Yishteh, describing the Bnei Yisrael will be successful in battle, they're going to drink the blood of their enemies. Not at all to be taken literally. The Jews never drank any Christian blood. It means they're going to succeed in killing the enemies. They'll be victorious in battle. V'dam Chalolim Yishteh. The blood is not familiar. You're not allowed to drink the blood. When they had the blood libel, so the Rabbanim were trying to defend the Jewish people, so they said, we're not allowed to drink blood. Then the Nochum found out that Dam Halfishtayim, Dam of a human being, is Mutamanatari. It's only awesome with the Rabbanim. So the Rabbanim said, well, we wouldn't violate any of the Rabbanim either. So that it's weakened the argument. The Jews never drank any blood, nothing to discuss. We're not interested in drinking any Christian blood, but to say that it's forbidden with the Rabbanim for us to drink the blood. It's Mutamanatari. So sometimes these during the Rabbanim, we have kulas on. So they had difficulties, they had trouble from the Christians. They made up a whole alila sadam. So the Gemara learns that from that pasuk v'dam chalolam yishteh, because Bilam HaRashi used that, either Bilam used that expression or HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated. So could be that Bilam didn't speak Hebrew at all. Could be that he spoke whatever language, Moab language. But because Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu, write v'dam chalolam yishteh. That's why the halacha says that dam chalolim of an adam is considered a mashke. That's how they say the name of Rabel Vela Soloveitchik, the beer on the Gemara in Bava Basra. The Gemara says in the first paragraph of Bava Basra, who wrote all the different 24 svarim of the Tanakh? The Gemara makes a statement that Moshe Kosov Sifro uParshas Bilam. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who wrote the Hamishu Chumshi Torah, and he also wrote Parshas Bilam. So on the side of the Gemara, they refer you to the Shalah, who asks Akasha, Bilam is one of the parshiyot of the Chumash. So what's the chiddush that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote Parshas Bilam? It's included in the statement, Moshe Kosov Sifro. What's added on by Parshas Bilam? Unless you say that Parshas Bilam is another book that's not included in the Tanakh. Some other book that he wrote, some novel. Is that Bilam? A short story or something about Bilam? That went out. But the Gemara seems to be talking about the Tanakh, the 24th psalm in the Tanakh. So Moshe Kosov said Parshas Bilam, no Parshas Bilam is part of the Chamish Chumash Ter. So Rabelvel Soloveitchik explained based on the Sifrei and the closing pasuk in Chumash that says V'lakom Naviyad V'Yisol Kemoshe Asher Yedo Hashem Panim El Panim. So the pasuk says that there was no Navi among the Jewish people as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rambam writes that's one of the 13 Ikari Emuna. One Ikari Emuna we believe that there's such a thing as Nevuah, and another Ikari Emuna we believe that Nevuah's Moshe Rabbeinu was greater than that of the other Navim. He was the Adon HaNavim. So the Sifrei comments on that pasuk, "Lakom Navi Yod B'Yisrael." Only B'Yisrael, but all of a sudden there was a Navi who was as great as Moshe Rabbeinu on the same level of Nevuah. Who is that? That's Bilam. So Abel Bilam Soloveitchik explained, maybe that's the Kavanah Sagamar. Moshe Kosov Sifro, who parses Bilam, that no one should think that whoever attained such a high level of Nevuah like Moshe Rabbeinu, namely Bilam, also was on the same level. Maybe whatever they say, whatever they write, automatically has the status of Torah. So just like Moshe Rabbeinu was on such a high level of Nevuah Aspeklari HaMeira, so whatever he said was Torah, and maybe Bilam HaRosha, whatever Nevuah he delivered was also Torah. So that's why the Gemara stresses, no, Moshe Kosov Sifra Parshas Bilam. Parshas Bilam only became a Chepta Shel Torah after HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated it to Moshe Rabbeinu, and then he wrote it down. My nafkamina. What's the difference whether it was Torah before? The answer is because we learn out halachas. Once in a while, we learn out halachas from Parshas Bilam. This is one of the halachas. Dam chalolam yishteh is learned out from the Nevuah Bilam. So it could be that Bilam didn't even say that. It could be that Bilam just said the Jews will be successful in the battle and they'll be victorious against all their enemies. It could be did say. It could be said in a different language, whatever. But the drasha that we darshan from the pasuk only began after it was written in the Torah by Moshe Rabbeinu. After HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated it to Moshe Rabbeinu, then it acquired the status of Torah. Before, when Bilam said it, it was Nevuah. The Midrash HaTorah and the Drash Hashem don't apply to Nevuah, like Yishaya, Yirmiyah, Yecheskel. You don't apply Midrash HaTorah and the Drash Hashem to Darshan. The Midrash HaTorah and the Drash Hashem, you only Darshan on Moshe Rabbeinu, whatever Moshe Rabbeinu said. So the Gemara means to emphasize that even though Bilam may have been on the same level of Nevuah as Moshe Rabbeinu, but what he had to say wasn't endowed with the status of Torah until Moshe Rabbeinu incorporated it into the Chumash. I'll call upon the Gemara learns that in that pasuk in Nida, the dam chalolim, dam shanashama yotzebo, that's dam chalolim, when the person is dead. Dam chalolim yishted has a din of mashke, it's one of the Zayin mashke. So then the Gemara says, and how do you know that even dam agafasa, when the Gemara hasn't been talking about a woman, so they talk about dam agafasa, the same din for a man. If a person is walking in the street and they trip and they start to bleed and they're bruised and they start to bleed, so that's called dam agafa. It's not dam shanashama yosma, no one's dying. But it's dam agafa. So the Gemara says, how do you know dam agafa is also machshel lekabel tuma, has the status of design mashma? So the Gemara makes this state, malikot lekulo, malikot lepalda. So basically, that's what Tosis is quoting. There is another Gemara in Bava Kama, but the Gemara has the expression malikot lekulo, malikot lepalda, but it has nothing at all. That's a more famous Gemara. People who learned in yeshivas know Perek Meruba, seventh parak in Bava Kama, when the Gemara talks about Tavuch HaMocha, the Ganav steals the Shabbos and he shechts it. So then the Gemara says that Hekhisha, if he made the animal lose weight because he didn't take good care, the Ganav stole the behemoth, didn't take good care of it. So then the Gemara says, Malikot Lekula, Malikot Lepalda. Since the Ganav is responsible for the animal losing weight, and then later on he shechts it, so he has to pay Dalai Behemoth on the higher amount. That's a totally different context. That's not what Tosis is alluding. They're alluding to this Gemara Nida, which says exactly this statement that they want. That not only is it considered Netilas Nesham, if it's Kotla Kula, if it's Kotla Palga, it's also called Netilas Nesham. So that's the Yisra of Chayvam. We mentioned that the Pashtus is that this should be the determination of death also. If you want to know when is a person alive, when is a person dead? So Moshe Feinstein Shulev that the tefillin on the left arm doesn't only apply to death on organs. The Pashto says it applies to death on the whole organism. When do you declare that the whole organism is dead? When the blood circulation stopped in an irreversible fashion. And that's the Pashto Pshat in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that if you chopped off the head, if you decapitated an animal or a person, Hutas Rosho, the head was chopped off. So then, even if the animal is still jumping around a little bit, still nefrachesis, so the animal is considered dead. Why is it considered dead? When you chop off the head, so you've just destroyed the circulatory system. True, the blood is going to still be rolling around for another couple of seconds, but the whole system flush. The whole system has to be complete. You have an Erev, and one little piece of the Erev falls out, so you can't carry the rest of the place. If you have a plumbing system in a building that's 100 Empire State Building, and it's all one big system, and one pipe, sometimes one pipe falls out, the rest of the system will function. But if everything is connected, so then if you take out one pipe on the 50th floor, so then the whole system collapses. It doesn't matter, the water's still going up, still going down, but you know the whole system collapses. And Hutas Rosho, the person is considered dead because the circulatory system collapsed. There is a Gemara in the end of Yuma that sounds like it says that we determine death by breathing, based on the pasuk in Parshas Noach, Kol Hashanishmas Ruach Chaim B'Yapov. So the Gemara seems to say, if the person is breathing, he's alive. If the person is not breathing, he's dead. So the Pashtus is, like the Chasam Sofer responded in his letter to Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes. The question came up in the 1800s. Several governments in Europe adopted a policy that you're not allowed to bury anybody who is declared as dead when the doctors sign a death certificate, and they sign when the person is dead. So they passed laws that you have to wait 72 hours after the death certificate is signed to make sure that he's really dead, because it turned out that there are a few cases where the doctors made a mistake and they were burying people who were still alive. So Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chayes sent a letter to the Chasam Sofer, maybe the Orthodox Jews should go along with the government. It was assumed we're not going to go along because it's a pasuk in Chumash. kavatik v'rena b'yamahu. So the Orthodox doctors, whenever anyone would be dead, they would write a death certificate that was 72 hours earlier. They would just write a date that would be 3 days earlier. Or they would have to take it. If someone was watching, they had to write the correct date, so they'd have to take the person mechutz la medina to bury them, which is still a practice in Europe. In certain countries, they have to bury somewhere else. Tzvi Yishchai suggested maybe we ought to go along with the government, because in the Maseches Machos we have an incident is told that someone once visited the cemetery and he heard one of the dead bodies apparently was really alive, and he was knocking on they buried in a big ohel, knocking on the gate, let me get me out of here, they buried me alive. So you see that such a thing is possible. Not only in the 1800s did it happen, the Gemara is recorded in the Maseches Smachas. Maseches Smachas from the Gaonim, it's not from the Gemara. Okay, whoever it's from. And then he quoted the Mishnah in the end of Nid, also talks about such a possibility that we thought a person is dead and then he's really alive. Such a mistake can be made. I mean, by Shikurim, maybe it's more common. But by Echeinim and Yisrael, we didn't have too many Shikurim, I guess. That's why we never had any wakes. I guess so. Uh-huh. Okay. So this was the Shaila that the Maris Chayis raised by the Chasam Sofer. That since the Goyim say that there's really a Sofek Sakona, maybe the guy's really alive and we declared him as dead incorrectly, then maybe we should also be choshish. And then he quoted a statement of the Rambam on the Haftarah, on yesterday's Haftarah, that the story is told in Sefer Melachim that Elisha HaNavi brought a child back to life. The Isha HaShanam has had no children. Elisha asked her, what can I do for you? And he gave her a blessing, she should have a baby. The baby died from a sunstroke, and then Elisha revived the baby. So the Gemara says that it was Tchias HaMeisim. The Gemara says that Elisha requested of Eliyahu HaNavi before he went up in the fiery chariot to the heavens. So he requested of him Tishnayim Beruchacha, and Tishnayim means twice the power of twice the Koach HaNevuah of Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi was Mechayi one Meis, and Elisha was Mechayi two Meis. That's how the Gemara says. So the Gemara understands that Elisha was Mechayi the Ben HaShunami. The Gemara, in fact, has a discussion in the end of Maseches Nida. The Ben Ashunamis was dead, so he had a Tumas Meis. Then when Elisha brought him back to life, was that just a trick? Is he really dead? But Elisha made a trick and the dead baby is walking around. It looks like he's alive, but it's really a fake. He's still Metame, or should we assume? No. He really brought him back to life and he's no longer Metame. So this is one of the 12 questions that the Anshe Alexandria asked of one of the Tanoim, Shur Hanania, somebody who was visiting there in Egypt. And he said that's a stupid question. He divides the questions, the 12 questions, into different parts. He says three of them were stupid. So this was a stupid question. He says it wasn't that the baby was dead and Elisha knew how to make magic that it should look as if he's alive. Elisha brought the baby back to life. So the Gemara assumes that the baby was dead and Elisha brought him back to life, and that was the Pishnai. The Rambam and the Mar Nebuchim writes that the baby had just fainted and he looked like he was dead, and Elisha HaNavi resuscitated him. Mouth to mouth resuscitation. So all of the commentaries is that it's against the Gemara. Okay, it's a problem. So then the Rambam, after he gives his interpretation of this passage in Sefer Melachim, yesterday's Haftarah, so he adds on, how did they think that he was dead? How did they make such a mistake? The answer is, we always determine that people are dead when they stop breathing. Sometimes a person holds his breath for a minute or two, but you can't hold your breath. If a person is sick and he looks like he died and he's not breathing for 20 minutes, then the Chevra Kadisha goes to work. They start doing the Tara and they bury him. We assume that if one is not breathing for 15, 20 minutes, then he's dead. That's it. If you don't breathe for 1 or 2 minutes, you'll survive. But for 15, 20 minutes, we assume you're dead. So the Rambam says, why did they assume that the little kid was dead, the Ben HaShunamis? Because he wasn't breathing for half an hour. If he wasn't breathing for a few hours, so they assumed he was dead. So Haitaka, how did Elisha bring him back to life? So the Rambam says there are unusual instances recorded in medical journals in medical history that someone stops up to the case in medical history. A person wasn't breathing for 3 days in a row, and after 3 days he came to. That's what the Rambam writes. So that's what happened over here by the Ben Oshanam. That's the Rambam's interpretation. So Maritz Chayis sent a letter to the Chasam Sefer. You see from the way the Rambam writes that sometimes a person cannot be breathing for 3 days and he's still alive. So how can we rely on this criterion that if a person stops breathing for 20 minutes, the Chevet Kadisha buries him, maybe he's still alive? So the Chasam Sefer responds back. He says, you are right. You demonstrated successfully from the Rambam statement in the Mor Nevuchim that breathing does not determine, breathing is not the koveya whether the person is alive or dead. He says breathing is a similar dog. I think Mar learned that from that pasuk kolon shenishmas ruachaim diapov. Don't you see from the Xeris Hakosu from the pasuk that that's the definition of life and death? So he says, yeah. First of all, it could be the pasuk is only an asmachta. He says, and even if you should assume that it's a real drashic murad, the breathing is a similar dog. How can you use it for a sim if it's not foolproof? So he says, maybe it's not foolproof. Once out of 5 million cases, you'll be making a mistake, but it's not going to be such a common mistake. But in the end of Yuma says, are you allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to rush the person to the hospital? So you see that he's not breathing for 20 minutes. So you know that he's dead, so you're not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for dead people. But if there's one chance in 5 million, so why shouldn't you still be Mechal Shabbos? So the Rambam says, no, that's ridiculous. So the Chasam Sefer writes, that's ridiculous. The Halacha that says, even though the Rov indicates that he's dead already, if there's a slim chance that he may survive, that he may be revived, you have to be Mechal Shabbos to try to bring him back to life. That's only if it's a reasonable chance that someone would consider a Bob Cheshbon. But Echad Mini Elef Alfei Alafim, that's ridiculous. So that's why by us we have accepted the halacha that if the person is not breathing for 20 minutes, you assume that he's dead. He says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Tariag Mitzvah to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Harsina, and he gave him a mitzvah, kovetik v'rena b'yamahu, that you have to bury people on the same day. He must have told Moshe Rabbeinu, how do you determine whether the person is alive or dead? Maybe he's just not breathing for a couple of days. The Rebbe Shlomo must have told Moshe Rabbeinu how to do the mitzvahs. He must have told him, you wait 20 minutes, if he's not breathing, you have the right to assume that he's dead, even though there is a far-out chance that maybe he's still alive. So the Chasam Sofer writes in his tshuva, in his response to the Maritz Chayis' issue that he raised with the Mor Nevuchim, he says, I agree with you, of course. The Rambam says that breathing is not the definition of life and death. The pasuk is either an asmachta, or even if it is for real, even if it's a drasha gemura, it doesn't mean that that's the definition of life. What is the definition of life he doesn't go into? That's what Lechora, the Tosfos, is saying based on the pasuk, Ki Adamu Anefesh. When the blood is, Ramosha said, on any specific organ, if the organ has blood circulating to it, that organ is alive. If the organ is gangrenous and there's no blood being circulated, so that organ is considered dead. The pashtus is, and the whole organism, the same criterion. Ki adamu anefesh, kolzman, that the blood is still circulating. Then the organism, the animal or the person is considered alive. There may be a mokum to distinguish between a person and an animal. Let's say since the most important part of, there's no isa lo sirisacham behem, it's only lo sirisacham people. So we're talking about, are you allowed to bury a person? Are you allowed to unplug the life support system of a person? So maybe there's room to say that if the brain is dead, so maybe there's no lo sirisach because he's not called a human being anymore. Alive he is, because if the blood is still circulating, he's still alive. And maybe he's not called a human being, but that's a chiddush. You have to have Makaris to say such a thing. I remember when we were learning Sanhedrin in the yeshiva, so we were learning the sugis of Ratzeach, so Rav Soloveitchik said he wondered about that. Years ago, there used to be a senator, a New York senator, Lehman. He was Jewish, and I think his sister was in a coma for many years. So, and they in the hospital. She was in a coma for many years until she died. Rav Soloveitchik said he was wondering if she's in a persistent coma state, so maybe there's no Issa Lo Yisir Tzach, but he said he didn't find any gemaras. So to take a stand to say that there's a difference between a human being and a bein, we say that the animal is still alive, so do you have the right to say even though the person is still alive, he's only considered on the level of an animal, he's not considered on the level of a human being, therefore there's no lo yisir tzach. You have to have a ray, you can't just say a svara like that. So he didn't see any rays one way or the other. He didn't say how anybody else could have any rays either. his statement was, even if the Vilna Gaon would be alive in our generation, he doesn't see that the Vilna Gaon would be able to take a stand on this issue because it's insufficient sources from the Gemara. You can't make up from thin air. Chilukim. The Gemara says later, in Perek Rav Lezer de Mila, one of the 24 prokhim is Rav Lezer de Mila. The Gemara says that after the Moyel completes the Bris Mila, he's supposed to do Mitzitza. What's the idea of performing the Mitzitza? So the Zohar says that there are three parts to Mila. There's Mila and there's Priya and there's Hatofas Hadam. The Mila is cutting off the outer membrane which is thick, and the Priya is either folding back like they did years ago, or in the last few centuries they cut off the lower membrane, the thin membrane, that's Priya. And then Hatofas Hadam is that you should see that a little blood will flow. There's always a little blood. When you're cutting off the skin, there's always Hatofas Hadam. How is it possible to do without Hatofas Hadam? So what do you need Mitzitza for? What's the Mitzitza all about? The Gemara seems to say that the Mitzitza is really only for medical purposes. Pashup Shad Gemara, Mitzitza is not really part of the Mitzvah of Mila. Mitzvah of Mila is finished already when you have the three parts, the Mila and the Priya and the Hatofas Hadam, and there's always a little Hatofas Hadam. And the Mitzitza is only for medical purposes to prevent infection. And that's why the Teferet Yisrael writes on Mishnayis Masechet Shabbos. Teferet Yisrael was a holy tzaddik, and he writes on Mishnayis Shabbos. He doesn't think that you need any mitzitza bichlal bizman hazeh, because we have antiseptics that prevent infection. So what do you have to waste? What do you have to draw out blood for? There's no need for mitzitza. So there was a big rash, was a big hullabaloo, a big stir in the Olam HaTorah whether they should accept him or not. So there's a long kuntris in the Dechemed that goes for around 40 pages where he quotes everybody at the time that he lived in the early 1900s. they all tumbled against. He was from Eretz Yisrael. Dechemed was from Hebron, and then he had a rabbanus in Russia, and then he went back to Eretz Yisrael. He's buried in a cemetery in Hebron. He died at the end of his life. He died in Hebron. He's buried there in the cemetery. So he had the letters from the Badats and the Eda Haredes and from the Rabbanim in Europe and everything. So there was a big issue. So many Rabbanim said, no, Mitzitza is part of the mitzvah of Milo. The Gemara says Mitzitza is for medical purposes. That's a different thing. That the Gemara says, why do you fire a Moel? If he does Milo and Priya and Hatafas Adam, he doesn't do Mitzitza, you fire the Moel. But if I then, well, tell him he should shape up, and next time make sure you do mitzitza. So the Gemara says, because he made a sakana for the baby, that's why. If he wouldn't fulfill the mitzvah properly, so we wouldn't fire him. We would work with him. We would tell him he got to be a little more careful. But because he caused the baby to be in a sakana, even if the baby survived, they didn't do mitzitza. The rest of the baby survived. The baby didn't die. But because he was negligent in the area, if you're negligent in the area of the religious observance, you don't fire them well right away. If he's negligent in sakana, so the Gemara says that you have to fire him. That's the Gemara in Bava Metzia. Gemara says in Bava Metzia, if you have a secretary or a guy has a job and he's not doing the job properly, so the Gemara says you have to warn him a couple of times. You have to do it like this, and if you're not doing correctly, I'm going to fire you. But you're not allowed to fire him without warning him. But what happens if the person is a malamed in the yeshiva and he's not doing a good job teaching the talmidim? So the menial should give him Musar a few times and then have the right to fire. The Gemara says, no, he's ruining the Talmidim. If the Menayel isn't, if the Rebbe in Yeshiva is not teaching properly, you fire him because it's a Pseida. He ruined the Talmidim those few days that he didn't teach them properly. So the Gemara says, the same applies to a doctor. If a doctor isn't doing a good job, the local doctor in the community, so they should fire him right away. They shouldn't warn him a few times because he's putting the people's lives to Sakon. So that's what many Poskim say, that the Gemara says, and sounds like it says in Rav Lezer de Mila that the mitzitza is only for the purpose of sakana. So a lot of achrayim say it's not true. The Gemara never said that. Mitzitza is part of the mitzvah of Mila. Aye, where does it say? Halacha Moshe Messina. What halacha Moshe Messina? The Zohar said there are three parts to the Mila. There's Mila and Priya and Hatofas Adam. No? Hatofas Adam you have. So they say, no, this is the way the Hatofas Adam has to be done. Hatofas Adam, you have to. You have to apply pressure. They suck out the extra dam. It's not enough just a little Hatofas Adam. You need a lot of Hatofas Adam for the actual mitzvah of Mila. But the Gemara says that it's a sakana, that's why you fire the moel if he doesn't do it. But why you do mitzitzah is because it's part of the ceremony of Nila. And then they had a further machlokes, is it necessary to do mitzitzah b'peh the way it was always done, or can you do mitzitzah b'kli? So that's many insist it has to be mitzitzah b'peh, and many will make on that. So in the middle of that discussion, if you look in the Stechemet, he quotes tshuvas from everybody. He quotes from the Maharam Shik. The Maharam Shik is very, very insistent that mitzitzah is a real din, a chelik of the Nila. And then he says, and even if one should assume that mitzitzah is only done for sakana purposes, how can the doctors know that if you're going to use an antiseptic, that this will prevent infection to the same extent as mitzitzah? How do the doctors know any medical information based on experimentation? So they've done, how many circumcisions have they done? 1,000 circumcisions, 10,000 circumcisions, 100,000, 1,000,000, 10 million circumcisions. Maybe if they'll do 10 million at one, maybe that baby will die because you were using antiseptic instead of doing mitzitzah. So if there's one chance, if there's a sakana, one chance in a million, billion, zillion, trillion, it's also called sofik sakana. That's what the Maram Shik writes. So that statement is in contradiction to what the Chasam Sofer said. The Chasam Sofer's tshuva says, if the guy stopped breathing for 20 minutes, we assume that he's dead, even though that's not the definition of death. That's a simen. But the Rambam writes in Mor in the Buchim that it's possible, it's recorded in medical history, that someone stopped breathing for 3 days, and it's recorded in Tanakh that the baby, Benu Shenamis, they thought he was dead. Obviously he stopped breathing for a few hours, and in the Maseches Machas it's recorded, in the newspapers it's recorded. You have different cases, and the Bikurim, whom we thought were dead, you have different cases. So the Chasam Sofer says, yeah, that's so far-fetched. One chance in a billion, trillion, zillion, so we have a right to ignore that. So that's beferish against the Maram Shik. It's usually assumed, the way the Chasam Sofer said, that lehocha b'dikuch nefosha sachar harov is only if it's a miyut that people would consider that's bo b'cheshbon. If it's a miyut that people would totally ignore, then the Gemara calls it shayme p'soim Hashem. The Gemara invokes that pasuk in Tehillim. Shayme p'soim Hashem. There's a suffix sakona that's so far-fetched that the minigolem is that people just don't worry about it. If you have a real suffix sakona and people ignore it, that's not shem epsoim Hashem. They're in violation of the din of the shmat miyod and nafshasecha. But if there's such a far-fetched suffix sakona, the incidence is so low, the percentage of such a sakona happening is so low, and that's why people ignore it, they just don't worry about that, that's the halacha of shem epsoim Hashem. That's not called the suffix sakona. So that's all pipashtus. That's what the Chasam Sofer said. That if a person stops breathing for 20 minutes, the possibility that maybe he is the case, like the Rambam's Morna Buchan case, or the story in the Sefer Melachim, or the story in the newspapers, so far fetched that you don't consider that as a suffix sakon. That's probably the explanation to the Peladika practice that was going on in the Midbar. The Gemara says for 40 years, only Shevet Levi was performing Mila on their babies, and the rest of the Shvatim were not observing Mila. Moshe Rabbeinu is standing there, and he doesn't do anything about it. What kind of a rabbi is he? They should fire the rabbi. So why didn't the others perform Bris Mila? The Gemara says there was a Suffolk Sakana. What's a Suffolk Sakana? The winds were blowing in the wrong direction, and there was a suffix sakana. The Ruach Tzfonus was not blowing. Shine. So you're not allowed to perform mila, suffix sakana. So he should scream at Shevet Levi? Why does he allow? No, he praises Shevet Levi. Brizchi in Sora, when he's about to die, he gives them a big yashikach. Shemri Masecha, Brizchi in Sora. They're the only ones. So if they were doing the right things, they should have given musa to the others. The others are not performing bris mila. What's going on over here? So the answer is, if the winds are blowing in the wrong direction, it doesn't make it a 50-50 suffix sakana. It's a far-fetched suffix sakana. The bris mila may not heal, and it may cause complications. So what's takadid in? If you have a far-fetched suffix sakana, when do you say that it has the status of a sakana, when not? So the Gemara says the rule is based on the pasuk shem epsoim Hashem. If people are concerned about it, then it's called the suffix sakana. If people are not concerned, then it's not called the suffix sakana. So sometimes they're different people. Some people are concerned, some people are not concerned. So Shevet Levi was not concerned. They had more bitachon than the other people. So because Shevet Levi was not concerned about this far-fetched suffix sakana, so for them it wasn't considered a sakana. For them we applied the klal Shem and Psoim Hashem. And for the rest of Klal Yisrael, it didn't have such strong bitachon. So for them it was considered a suffix sakana. They were nervous. And this is a psak that the Chofetz Chaim gave. Chofetz Chaim died in 1935, before the Nazis came to power. But there was a lot of anti-Semitism all over. So on one occasion he visited the city lodge, and two balabatim asked him the same shaila, that they had a job, they were Shomer Shabbos, and they made so little money they could just make ends meet. And there was a concern that the anti-Semitism may get worse, and they may have to run to save their lives, and they don't even have enough money to pay for it. They just had enough to make ends meet, to have food and clothing. They don't have enough money to take a train and to run for their lives in the event that such a sakana should come up. Are they permitted to take a job to be Mechal Shabbos, Al Shem Ha'asid, because of this Chashash sakana? So the two Balabatim came B'zeh HaZeh on the same day. So he asked each one the same question. Are you personally nervous about it? Or just heard that other people are concerned about it? But the Balabosu said, yeah, he is very nervous about it. He personally sees that it's a real sakana. He's scared. He sees all the anti-Semitism, and he's very afraid. So the Chofetz Chaim told him, you're allowed to take a job to work on Shabbos. That's called suffix sakana. And the other Balabosu asked him, are you personally concerned? He said, tell you the truth, he thinks it's a joke. But that's what other people say. Other people say that there's what to be concerned about. So that's why he's asking, do I have to be concerned because the others say? So the Chofetz Chaim said, if you personally are not concerned, then it's not called the suffix sakana. And that's based on this Gemara, Shem Epsoim Hashem. The Gemara doesn't have the Shem Epsoim Hashem in such a case that for those who are nervous, it is a suffix sakana. For those who are not nervous, not. The Gemara talks about a case that the minhag olam is that no one is worried about this. So the Chofetz Chaim said, but that's the basis of the Gemara, that to those who are concerned, if you have a far-fetched suffix sakana, and it's reasonable to be concerned, and it's not unreasonable not to be concerned. So each person, each chayla determines, each potential mesukan determines on his own. For those who are concerned, it's called the suffix sakana. The question is over here though, the Shevet Levi, very nice, they want to have bitochen. They can have bitochen on their cheshbon. What right do they have to have bitochen on the cheshbon of their children? They're performing a bris milah on their baby. They're not doing on the adults. So is that right, that they have a right to have bitochen on the children? That's the issue in Eretz Yisrael. They have people who decided to move into Chevel Aza, into Yehuda v'Shomron, and they put their children's lives into sakona. So the people who want to go, the adults who want to go, and they move in and they say, we're not concerned, we don't feel the sakona. Okay, so they have thick skin and they're not scared. They're happy talking, they're shaved later, but do they have a right to bring their children in? So would it appear from the Gemara that yes, the Gemara seems to say that Shevet Levi had the right to determine on the little baby. The baby is only 8 days old. The baby doesn't have any day. What if the child grows up and he's scared? The child is growing up in Yehuda v'Shomron or in Aza, and the kid said he's scared, and the parents say, well, we're going to stay here whether you like it or not. That's Taka Shaila. Once the kid is already grown up and he understands what's going on, and he's frightened, so then the chayr should be a suffix sakana for the child. Maybe Kozman, the child is a la badas. Maybe then the parents have a right to determine. That's a question. Anyway, that was the tshuva that the Maharam Shik wrote about the Mitzitza. That line in the Maharam Shik is very straight. He says that all of medical knowledge is based on experimentation, and they only know to the extent that they've experimented. So if they've done 100 circumcisions, done 1,000, they've done 100,000, they've done 1,000,000, 10,000,000 circumcisions, maybe you'll do one more and the baby will die because of a lack of mitzitza. So that's called the suffix sakana. 1 in 10,000,000. 1 in 10,000,000. 1 in 10,000,000 people, when they have an ingrown toenail, die from the ingrown toenail. But people are not nervous about it. So a guy is not going to be Mechal Shabbos. A guy's not going to run to the hospital on Shabbos if he has an ingrown toenail. If it would be the weekday, guy's an ingrown toenail, Would he take off from work that day to go to the doctors? He may die. He may be the lucky winner, the 1 in 10 million. He may die today. He's not going to take off from work. He's not going to be concerned. He'll take care of it tonight. When he comes home, he'll suffer during the day from his painful ingrown toe. He'll go to the doctor tonight. And if the doctor's not open tonight, he'll go tomorrow night. He's not going to take off from work. It's on Shabbos. When he doesn't go to work and he's not afraid of losing money, he's not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. That's not called the Suffolk Sakana, because of one out of 10 million people die from an ingrown toenail. It always hits the headlines of the Enquirer when someone dies from an ingrown toenail. So such a funny Maisa Tamua. So we assume all the time, like the Chasam Sefer, it's a far-fetched chashash that normal people are not really nervous about. That's not called the Suffolk Sakana. That's exactly the principle of Shem Epsayim Hashem. Anyway, that was a very interesting topic in Tosis about the nature of the Yisur of Chovel, and Tosis' opinion is the one that's more popular, more so than Rashi, who claims that it's Zaveh, and the Rambam says that it's Dosh. The generally accepted opinions like Tosis, because that's what it says in Yishama, that it's in Stilus Neshama, and they come up with this idea, Malikot L'kula, Malikot L'palga, that's the Gemara, the end of Nida. What's the end of Nida? That's an assumption. I don't know. Moshe assumes if it's dead, so it's like it's not part of the body. So sachidish. He doesn't prove that premise. He just assumes that. It's based on the Gemara. The Gemara says if there's one organ of the body where there's no blood circulating, that's called mechuser eiver. Why is it mechuser eiver? The eiver is still attached. He says, you see from the Gemara, whatever is a dead, he never states that, you know. He's working with that Gemara, so he seems to be assuming like that. That's considered as if it's detached from the body. If one organ is dead, so it's mechuser eiver. So here also, it's considered as if it's not part of the body, because the left arm is gangrene, has gangrene, so it's considered like it's not attached to the body. Then we had an interesting discussion of Gram. The Gemara says later that Gram Kibui is Mutter on Shabbos. That's a Mishnah Kuf Chof Omer Aleph, and it's quoted Laloch and Shulchan Aruch. That's how the Gemara explains the Mishnah. Is a little unclear. The second Mishnah Kuf Chof Omer Aleph, but that's how the Gemara explains on Omer Beis, and it's based on the Pasuk, 10 lines from the bottom. Pasuk says in Shmos, chapter Chof, Lasasakam Alach, Asihu Diyasa Gram Mashori. The Gemara says that Gram Alach is Mutter. Here there is a big Machlekes HaRishonim. What does that mean? So, Chazon Ish points out that Tosis' opinion is, both in Beis and in Shabbos, that Gram Alach is Mutter, period, Sof Pasuk. That's the end of the whole story. Gram Alach is Mutter. They never made a Chumar even with the Rabban. The Ramah does not accept La Alacha. That says Ramah quotes the Mordechai Halacha LaMaisa, the Gram Alacha, Gram Kibui. That's another question. So the Gemara says, Lasas Gram Alacha, Gram is Mutter. Is it only by Kibui? Or does it apply to all the 39 malachas? Why should it only apply to kibui? That's strange. Maybe it only applies to kibui in some of the malachas, and maybe it doesn't apply to all the malachas. Why should? What's the Mishnah Brura quotes that suffix? What's the room? That's the suffix that he quotes in the Shulchan Gibborim on the side of the Rith. What's the room to be misupik about that? So we suggested that the Ragachova, the Tzafnas Paneach, comments on the Gemara there. The Gemara says the Gram Mechikas Hashem is Mutter. And Gram Sira seems to be awesome. All on that same daf on Kuf Kof on the base. And more talks about Gram by the various Isuri Torah. Not only in the area of Shabbos. So why is Gram Sira Sosser? Why is Gram Mechikas Hashem is Mutter? So the Ragachava says it depends on each Isur in the Torah. There are two types of Isurim. Sometimes it's an Isur Pul or sometimes an Isur Chalois. That's the terminology that Rav Soloveitchik used to use. Ragachava has a different terminology. But what it boils down to is the following. Sometimes the Torah prohibits you from bringing about a certain result. Sometimes the Torah prohibits you from doing a certain activity. So if it's forbidden to do this pu'ula, if you do it ayde grama, so you didn't do it. The pu'ula doesn't, you didn't do the pu'ula. You did a grama and it happened by itself. But if the whole nature of the issue is an isa chalos, Torah says don't bring about such a result. So then even if you do it ayde grom, it'll also be awesome. So the Shulti Gibarim is Mesupik. Maybe not all the malachas are the same. Maybe you should divide the malachas into two categories. Maybe some of them are Isuri Pu'ula, and some of them are Isuri Chalos. And maybe those that are Isuri Pool or the Gemara has the right to say Ramashari, because you didn't do the Maisa Malacha. As opposed to perhaps some of the Malachas being Isuri Chalos, you're not allowed to bring about a situation where you have Bishul taking place or something like that. So maybe we should word some of the Malachas as Isuri Chalos, in which case we should assume that Groma will constitute an Isa Deraisa. Okay, so that's a Sufik in the Bir Halacha. He doesn't have, he's not patient. He quotes that Sufik from the Shulta Gibur. So the Ramoa, getting back again, the Ramoa, Paskins Halacha, like the Mordechai's opinion, and Daf Kuf Chof, in Masecha Shabbos, that Groma is Mutam and Atar, but it's also in the Rabbanon. When the Mishnah says that Gram Kibui is Mutar, that's because it's B'makam Dleik, or the house is burning down, or the furniture is going to suffer a major loss. So you only matir the Issa the Rabbanon Minatara, or Grom is Mutam the Rabbanon and Sasser. Then if you have a Makam Hefsid Meruba, or you have a Makam Chayli, or you have a Makam Mitzvah, so then you would be Makal on Grom. But if you're missing some reason why to be Makal Stam to do a Grom Aloche, so there are more Paskins from the Mordechai that would be awesome the Rabbanon. So here is a major question: how do you define Grom? What's the definition of Grom Aloche? Now they have all the grumma machines in there, so anything that you're not allowed to do is you can make a grumma machine. So what's a grumma machine? So there's a question and definition over here. So the Shmir Shabbos Kol Chassid quotes some of the earlier Akronim who define grumma as a delayed reaction. If I turn on the switch and the light doesn't go on right away, it takes a moment or two till the light goes on, so that's called grumma. Whenever there's a delay, that's called grumma. So Rav Soloveitchik was very unhappy with that definition. He thought that didn't hold any water at all. And he thought that we should define grumma as follows. This is my moshel. This is not his moshel. It is a Gemara in the second parak in Bava Basra, Perek Lo Yachbar, where the Gemara says, "Machikim mitzudas adag ben adakim loy ritzas adag." That if a fisherman sets up nets and he leaves bait there, what is the bait? They leave dead fish, they tie on fish, worms. Not people, bait they put in worms. Okay, in the days of his mother, he used to put dead fish. Doesn't make a difference, a worm, a fish. And then, so the fisherman puts in the nets with the bait, and then he goes to sleep, whatever, playing cards, listening to the radio. And then the other fish see this bait and they start swimming towards the bait in order to swallow it. And then when they swallow it, then the hook catches them and they're caught. So the Gemara says you're not allowed to take the fish. It's an Issa d'Rabbanan. Min HaTorah, the fisherman is not kind of those fish because he didn't make a kinyan on them. But midirabbanon, it's an isa gzeila. You're not allowed to take the fish that got caught in his net because of the fact that he laid out the effort and energy, and he laid out money because he put the bait there and so on. So it's not their heritage. It's not proper. It's not fair. So they made an isa d'rabbanon. So the k'tayis achayshin achayshin mishpon is bothered with akasha. Why shouldn't it be gzeila min atayra? Why is the fisherman not kind of the fish with mishicha or hagbor? If the fish swims sideways, if the fish sees the bait, smells the bait, whatever, and it swims sideways, let that be Mashiach. Or if the fish is below and it swims up, let that be Hagbor. So you don't know whether the fish was swimming down. If the fish swims down, then it's not a Kinyan. But if the fish was swimming sideways or from down to up, let that constitute a Kinyan Mashiach Hagbor, because the Gemara says in Kiddushin that if you want to be Koina Behemah with Mashiach, you can whistle to the behemoth, kori lo v'hibor. If you whistle to the animal and it walks towards you, so that constitutes a Mashiach. So you see that even though the Mashiach was done with tziruf koyach hacham yuraboy, that the behemoth itself did the walking, but since I initiated the behemoth's walking, I whistled to the behemoth and I caused it to walk towards me, so that's mitzuref to me, and it's considered as if I, with the assistance of the koyach hacham yuraboy, as if I did the Mashiach. And the Gemara Kiddushin says the same regarding hagbor. According to Taisa, the Gemara says one time is of the opinion that Mashiach is not kind even by Behema Gasa. So the Gemara says, how in the world is going to be kind an elephant? You got to make Hagbor. How are you going to make Hagbor an elephant? So the Gemara says, Kavila is Morris. You have a bunch of branches and you'll be able to do Hagbor. What does he do with the branches that he makes Hagbor? The Rashi learned to make a pile of branches and you have the elephant climb up. You encourage the elephant to climb up on top of the pile of branches, the Chavila is Meiris, so that's the Hagbor. And Tosfos doesn't agree with Rashi. Tosfos quotes a different shot in Kiddushin, that you wave the branches, cherry branches, whatever, some kind of fruit branch. You wave it on top of the elephant's going to jump up in order to grab the fruit, so that constitutes a Kinyan Hagbor. So again, the same, you see from the Gemara that if Kari Lo Behibor, if you do a Mashiach with the assistance of the animal itself, you do a Hagbor with the assistance of the animal, so that's Korach Achmir Bo, relates back to me. So that's the kasha that the Ktzois asks. If you leave the bait, leave the worms, they leave the dead fish in the net, and this attracts the other fish to swim towards it, either towards it sideways or towards it from above to below, from below to above. So let that be either a Kinyan Hagbo or a Kinyan Mashiach. So the Ktzois HaChoshen doesn't give an answer. So the Nesiva says he thinks the answer is obvious. By Kori Lo Behibo, when you whistle to the animal, the reflex reaction of the animal follows immediately. I whistle to the behemoth, and the behemoth comes right away. So since the Korach HaChmir Bo comes immediately upon the heels of my activity, so that's the tariff to me. Or if I'm waving the branches above the head of the elephant, and the elephant jumps up while I'm waving, so that's simultaneous. So if the Korach HaChmir Bo starts to function, it's functioning simultaneously with my Maisa, or it comes immediately following my Maisa, then the Gemara says it's tariff to me, and that constitutes a Mashiach. However, if I put the nets in the water and I leave in the bait, and then I go take a nap, I go start playing cards, and I'm not watching at all, I'm not paying attention, and then the fish come, so true, they did a Mashiach or they did a Hagbor, but that's grommet, that's not called Korach HaChmirba. Korach HaChmirba requires that it should be either simultaneous, the other Korach should be simultaneous with my Maisa, or pick up immediately after my Maisa. So Rav Soloveitchik thought that that is the correct definition of grommet regarding Shabbos. Because the Gemara Maseches Bava Kamma and Perek HaKoinah says that Korach HaChmirba constitutes a Malacha by Shabbos. We learn it out from Zorah Baruch Nisayaito. And the Rambam assumes that this is so by all the Lama Tassavas Malachas, nothing different, nothing unique about Zorah. All the Malachas will be the same. So how does Koyach HaChmir Bo differ from Grama? That we say that Grama is only an Issa Dirabbanan, or Smuta Yivim Dirabbanan. And when do we say that it's Koyach HaChmir Bo? So Rav Soloveitchik thought the same as in Nefilas. If the Koyach HaChmir is functioning simultaneously with my Maisa, or immediately upon the heels of my Maisa, then it's called Koyach HaChmir Bo, then it's going to be a Malacha Deraisa. But if the Korach doesn't begin to function, doesn't kick in until after I finish my whole Maisa, I walk away, and then the Korach picks up, comes in. So that would be called Grama.
When you're going down to the mikvah and the water's already touching your hands, so isn't that immediate?
Yeah, that Gemara is Sama Pela Dike Gemara. The Gemara Kuf Chof Amabes speaks about Gram Mechikas Hashem. Some guy has a Shem Hashem written on his skin. From a Shugana. Has a Shem Hashem written on his skin. So he goes into the mikveh, and the water of the mikveh is going to erase it. So why does the Gemara consider that grama? Why in the world is that grama? That should be mamish biadayim. As he's walking in, it gets erased. So the Chazon Ish has a paragraph on this where he works very hard to try to explain why the Gemara considers that grama. That's tamatela. We don't understand that Gemara. Why does the Gemara think that that's grama? So the Chazon Ish explains something. It's not going to get erased. Not going to get erased. You're weakening the ink. The ink is going to be, it's not rubbing. If you rub it off, that's mamish biyadayim. That's mechika biyadayim. It's just that it gets weaker and it's going to get erased earlier. So for some reason or another, the Gemara considers that grama. That's a difficult Gemara. That's quite a problematic Gemara. So this definition of grama seems to be grama versus Korach HaChmir Bo is probably what the Pnei Yeshua is driving at. The Tesis on Ayin Heim and Aleph. The last two lines in Dibra Maschla, Tzot Chalos, and says he quotes the Rishalmi, Shalmi Mashma, the Tzot Chalos, Lo Mechayim Shem Tzeda. The Bavli quotes a Tosefta, Hatzot Chalos, on Tosefta Perktes, Hatzot Chalos, on Chayim Shem Tzeda. It is a Malacha Deraita of Tzeda. The Rishalmi says there's no Tzeda. So which is it? So the answer is sometimes yes and sometimes no. Sometimes it's going to be Tzeda, sometimes not going to be Tzeda. Why should the Rishami think that there's no tzeidan chalos and manishtan? What's a chalos? A different kind of an animal. So the Pnei Yeshua explains based on what the Tosfos seems to say in the first paragraph. in Maseches Shabbos. The end of the first parak says, Machlekes B'Shamir Silu, I permitted to set up the system on Erev Shabbos when the Malacha begins on Erev Shabbos and continues to function into Shabbos. You put in a cloth into a vat of dye and it starts to absorb the dye on Erev Shabbos and it continues to absorb more dye into Shabbos. So you turn on the sprinkler system on your lawn on Erev Shabbos and it continues to sprinkle the lawn into Shabbos. So that's a Malacha, and Mashke Maim, some kind of a Malacha or another. Or Tzavei is a Malacha. So that's the Machlek, is Bishanim Bisil, if you set up the system. So the Mishnah has a third example where there's a Machlek, is a fellow sets up nets, and the nets are going to catch animals. So it's not exactly the same as the other two cases. The other two cases, the Malacha begins on Erev Shabbos and continues into Shabbos. But the case in the nets, the Malacha may begin in the middle of Shabbos. And there is some who hold that that's not allowed. Even Beisila who permit you to set up a system where the Malacha begins on Erev Shabbos, continues into Shabbos, but to set up a system where the Malachas are going to begin in the middle of Shabbos, so then we mentioned the Pirush HaRambam, Mamasech HaShabbos, he thinks based on the Yerushalmi that that's not allowed. So how can the Mishnah say that Beisila will permit you to set up the nets? So the answer is, Tosfos raises this issue, it's not Shabbos, it's not Doma B'Doma. The case of setting up nets is not the same. The Tosfos says setting up nets is more kal, because even if you set up a net on Shabbos and an animal gets caught in another hour, they don't think that that would constitute a Malacha Deraisa. Why not? I mean, it's a Koach Acham Yuravoy. Koach Acham Yuravoy is Deraisa. When I set up the net, the animal doesn't get caught unless the animal runs into the net. So let it be a Koach Acham Yuravoy. So the answer is no. That's not called Koach Acham, that's called Grumma. Why is that not called Koach Acham Yuravoy? The answer is the Koach Acher. The animals are running all over the place. Okay, wild deer are running in the jungle, in the forest, and wild elephants and fish are running all over the place. But they're running now. They're going to decide later whether they want to run into the trap, whether they want to run into the net. The fact that they're running now, it's not that you push the button, they're running, and then they're going to run straight into the net. Every minute they run here, they run there, they run the other place. Ultimately, some animal is going to get caught over here based on jump. It's going to make a bad jump later. But it's not a hemshech of the jumping that the animal is doing now. It's going to run into the net at that time. So since that koach acher of the animal's running and jumping didn't even begin till way later, so that's not called koach acher, but that's considered grum. That's what Rashi Soloveitchik thought, that if you have things on a Shabbos clock, let's say it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you push a button on the Shabbos clock that the light should go on at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he thought that that's not called Grumma, that should only be the Rabbanan and only Mutter, the Mokam Seyd and so on. He thought that that's a Deraisa. He thought since the clock is ticking away and the clock is attached to the light and the whole system is all set up, so he thought that that's Mamish. The Koach Acher picks up immediately after I set up the whole system, I put the system in motion. The Koach Acher is ticking away. So he thought that that doesn't qualify as a grum. He thought that should be a Koach Acher, but that should be Deraisa. It shouldn't only be a Derabbanan. The Tosfos writes, the only time I thought would be Deraisa on Shabbos is if you catch the animal b'yadayim, if you set a trap, and as you set the trap, the animal gets caught immediately. Okay? So there the Koach Acher boys picked up immediately on the heels of my mice. I did my myself setting the trap, and then the animal runs into it right away. So if it runs in right away, then it'll be Deraisa. That's what the Pnei Shul points out. That's what Tosfos says in the first parak, and the Mishnah in the end of the first parak. So that's a definition of grum. A person does a pula now, and then there's going to be a koach achum your boy. He knows the koach achum will come later. That's a Rab Chaim and the Chazon Ish both write also in a different context. They're talking about Ritziche or Mazik es Chavero. So they also write like that. The Gemara in the end of Sanhedrin distinguishes between Kofsa Bechama as opposed to Sof Chama Lovoi. If it's only Sof Chama Lovoi, the sun will come later. I tie a person up, and then the sun rises later, and the sun beats down on him and it kills him. But right now, I didn't tie him up in the sun. So the Koach Acher doesn't begin. I'm not harnessing the sun. I tied him over here. The sun is moving on its own. Koach Acher doesn't relate yet to what I did. Doesn't begin to relate. So that's called Grumma. But if Kofso Bicham, I tie him up in the sun, and the sun is beating down on him now, because the sun will continue to beat down for an hour, that's what's going to cause his death. So that's Koach Acher, but that's not called Grumma. Then the Ritzech would be Chayim. So Rav Chaim and the Chazon Ish and their Svarim both point that out. This distinction between Grama as opposed to Koach Ach Meyurabo. So Grama we assume is also the Rabbanon. Grama means I do a pula now, and the Koach Ach is not going to set in till later, but I know, I'm aware of the fact that the Koach Ach will come later. So that's the halacha, that Grama is also the Rabbanon. What if I do a pula now, and the Koach Acher is a human being who's going to make a conscious decision based on his Bechira Chavshes to do something later? So is that also called Grama? I know that somebody wants to cook some water to have coffee. So I pour water into the samovar, but the samovar is not plugged in. And I know that the Nachri is going to take the plug and plug in. He says, I'd like to have some water. He says, hey, there's no samovar, there's no water, there's no fire. So one person brings the samovar. The samovar may be a klisha malach talisa, a frying pan. Probably a klisha malach talisa, maybe a kol malach talisa, I don't know. So you're not allowed to be metalpa. But he didn't, the Jew who brings him the samovar is not over on a malach deraisa. He didn't do, he's not chai nisa. So let's say one Jew brings the samovar, and another Jew fills it up with water, but it's still not plugged in, and the third person plugs it in. So the Rambam quotes the Gemara in the end of Beitza, that ha'achren chayiv, only the last one is chayiv. So that's all the Rambam writes, ha'achren chayiv, in the Tosefta, in the Gemara in Beitza, Tosefta from Masechet Shabbos, quoted in the Masechet Beitza. So the Tosefta says, ha'achren chayiv, kulam pturim. The Loshon HaBrais is kulam pturim. So some of the poskim on the dike from that Loshon HaBrais is kulam pturim, Shmuel said on Daf Gimel, on Masechet Shabbos, whenever it says potter, means that it's potter avalasa, with only three exceptions to the rule. So this grad, this is not in the Mishnah, this is in the Tosefta, but some of the poskim say this case also is potter avalasa. Why is it aser? Why is it aser? Let's say the third one is going to do the punchline. One person brings an empty samovar. Okay. And I understand what's going on. The Nachri wants to have some water cooked up as coffee. So I take a pitcher of water and I pour the water into the samovar. The samovar is not plugged in yet. So I helped out the Nachri on Shabbos. What's wrong? And then the Nachri is going to plug in the plug. So did I do anything wrong? I didn't do any malacha. It's not Amir or the Nachri. It's not my samovar. It's not for me. It's for him. It's his samovar. I didn't do anything wrong. So that's what some hold, that's considered gram malacha. Because I set up the situation so that the next person is going to be able to do the malacha, Achman Chai, the one that plugs in the plug, is causing the bishul. He's chai mishum mevashel, but the one who poured the water into the samovar is considered a grum. In other words, grum is not only when there's going to be a koyach hacham yur, but it's going to come later. Even if it's going to be a human person who's going to make a conscious decision based on b'chira chavshes, but one could argue, how can you even relate that to nima d'rabbanan? It's his pula. He's the balapula. You can say the wind is going to blow later on, the fish are going to run into the net, some of the Rabbanon, you relate that to me. If the fish would have been running into the net immediately now, it would have been my Maisa. That Korach Acham Yorboi is elevated to the level of, that's their Isa, that Korach Acham Yorboi. Even if the fish are going to run in later on, that's also of the Rabbanon. You relate the activity of the fish to me, and I'm the Bala Maisa of the Rabbanon. But to say that a human being is going to make a conscious decision later, he's going to plug in the samovar. So you say that it relates back to me. So I'm also chayiv mid the rabbanon mishum. It's also mid the rabbanon mishum mevashel. That's a big chiddush, but that's what some posts can write like that. That even if it's a person who's going to do this, the final step, it's also considered grama, and it's also. That's why he mentioned the Rav Soloveitchik thought that it's not permissible to pose for a photograph. Even if the one who's going to take the photograph is going to be a nachri, I'm not asking him to take the photograph. He wants to do on his own. There's not nirul a nachri. It says in Shulchan Aruch, there's no Amir al-Nachri if I tell a Nachri to do a malach al-Sarach Atman with his own object. If I tell a Nachri, it's such a nice day, why don't you take my car and drive to the beach and have a nice time? Even though I'm encouraging the Nachri to do a malach of himself, I'm encouraging him to do the malach with my automobile. So that's called Amir al-Nachri, it's awesome in the Rabban. But if I encourage the Nachri, why don't you take your car and drive to the beach and have a good time? So that's not Amir al-Nachri. That's Amsar al-Nachri with his own instruments. That's not Amir al-Nachri. So what if I, even if I encourage al-Nachri, why don't you take a picture of the way we're davening here? Wouldn't you be interested in remembering this site? A guy comes to shul or something. So the Nachri is going to have his own camera. and he's doing the malacha on his own, so I'm encouraging the nachri to do a malacha the tzarach atzma. So there's no isamil and nachri in that. But the shaila is, if I'm going to pose, maybe that's an isur of grama. That's based on that gemara, that tosefta of Shabbos that's quoted in Masechet Beit, it would appear that that too is called grama. Because it says, so achron chayiv, the chulam pturim. Sounds like pata rabbalam.
So
I mean, if the Akron is not a Bar Chiyuva, maybe the Rishonim will be Chayiv.
Wait, no, maybe the Rishonim will be not even a
Grama. Oh, maybe the Rishonim won't even be a Grama. Could be. Okay. What to think about? What to consider? I thought you meant like the Niri. If the Achron is a La Bar Chiyuva, so maybe I consider it like a Koach Achom Yorboi, even though it's Boli Achaz Man. I don't know. You should research it some more. You should fish around for some more Tosefta, some more Gemara. See if we can find a Haichacha one way or the other. Yeah, we all know that there are 613 mitzvahs. How many people know which are the 613 mitzvahs? Not too many people. Not too many people. The Rambam claims he was the one and only one who knew all the 613 mitzvahs. He disagrees with all those who preceded him. Yeah. So here's a new one. There's a mitzvah. Gemara quotes a pasuk in Chumash on Ayin Hem and Aleph. A mitzvah ha'adam l'chashiv tkufas u'mazolas. It's a mitzvah on every Jew to calculate the tkufas and the mazolas. Good morning. It's an Ayin mitzvah. What kind of a mitzvah is that? So the Bahag quotes this Gemara in the Minyan mitzvah. The Bahag lists off what he thinks are the 613 mitzvahs. And the Rambam disagrees with a lot of the positions that the Bahak takes. So this is one of them. The Rambam says, come on, this doesn't, there is no smachta. How can you really understand that this is one of the mitzvahs of Torah? To calculate the tkufas, figure out when the moilad is. The Shamas and the Shul has to figure out when the moilad is. Moilad for now. When the moilad goes. A mitzvah to figure out the moilad. So the Ramban comes to defend the Halachas Dos because the Rambam left so much. Every so often the Rambam makes such late sonnets in the Halachas Dos, so the Ramban is aching, he's in pain. So he defends the Halachas Dos, but he says, I personally don't agree with the Bahag. But I'll always defend the Bahag. So that's what he does in the Sefer Mohammed also. He'll always defend the Riv from the attacks of the Balmoah, and he says, I don't necessarily agree with the Riv. I'm just showing that you can't lift the Riv out of existence. That's what he does in the Sefer HaMitzvahs also. The Rambam can't laugh so much at the Shitas HaGaonim. They can be defended. So he defends the Bahag by making a statement that maybe this mitzvah l'chashiv tkufas u'mazolas means a mitzvah to calculate, to determine Iber HaShana. Whereas the Rambam says that there's one big mitzvah, one big fat mitzvah that has two parts to it. To determine Kiddush HaChodesh and Iber HaShana. And that mitzvah is the Kviya Salua. So the Halachas Dovus is of the opinion that these are two distinct mitzvahs. HaChodesh is Alachem Rosh Chodoshim, and Rashi quotes from the Gemara Kazerei V'Kadesh. When you see Lulavana at this time of the month, in this shape, it's time to declare Rosh Chodesh. HaKiddush HaChodesh is one mitzvah. And this L'chashat Kufas and Mazolus is the mitzvah of Yibra Hashanah. It's a separate mitzvah. That's that the Bahag holds that these are two mitzvahs. So the Rambam makes fun, he thinks that they're one mitzvah. So the Ramban says, I can understand the Bahag, that he thinks that they're two distinct things. They're related to each other, but they're still two distinct things. At least he saves the Gemara like this. The Gemara is like, Mamash Apella. A mitzvah to calculate when the Moilad is. So what kind of a mitzvah is that? The Ramban says, no, it means the mitzvah to calculate, to determine when it's going to be a Shana Moberet. We had the Gemara Ayin Dalet Amud Beis, so the Gemara doesn't spell out all the details. The Gemara says if a person manufactures a basket on Shabbos, he violated seven malachas, and sometimes a person manufactures, he makes an oven, a little oven, he'll be chayiv mishum eight malachas, and if he did a b'shogeg, he'll have to bring seven or eight chatos. So the Gemara leaves it up to tradition to figure out which are the malachas. So Rashi and Tosfos are arguing about the details. Which malacha did he violate? So Rashi says, well, Bona he didn't violate. That lo bo b'cheshbon. Bona is lo bo b'cheshbon. So the halacha says that ain't binyan b'kelim. Now, so Rashi writes in other places as well that there's never any binyan b'kelim at all. Tosfos later disagrees with Rashi, and they have three kashas. on Daf Kuf Beis Amud Beis. One kasha is that there's a machlekes Rabbi Shmuel, whether one who puts in the handle into the metal part of the hammer and he attaches the two parts together, is that a malacha bona? Is that a malacha makaba patish? But you see that it is possible. What is Rashi machavek? Rashi says bona is impossible. Why is it impossible? Machlekes Rabbi Shmuel. So the Vilna Gaon says, yeah, Machlekes Rabbi Shmuel. And Rashi holds that all the sugyas paskin against Shmuel, I guess, against Rabbi, whichever one. Rashi holds the stomach of the Gemara is against that mandam. Okay. Then Tosfos says another kasha. The Gemara says on Daf Mem Zayin that if you take, if you bought some furniture from the department store, and they give you instructions how to assemble it on your own. They take a screwdriver and a hammer, whatever, you're assembling the whole thing on your own. So the Gemara says, if you screw in the nails, you screw in the screws tightly, in toka, chayiv chatas. So don't you see, b'feirish, that there is binyan b'kelim. That if he screws in, and binyan b'kelim means if you have a convertible sofa, or you have a folding table. So you open it up, you close it, so that's no binyan b'kelim, because you didn't manufacture it clean. But if you put together a table and you tighten the screws tightly, it's not a convertible table. You fix it once and for all. So then the Gemara says b'feirish that it is a malacha. So how can Rashi say that it's only the Rabbanan? So the Ran comments on Daf Mem Zayin. The Ran on the wrist seems to be going like Rashi. So he says it doesn't say which malacha you violated. Just as in Toka, if you screwed in the screws tightly, chayiv chatas, that's a malacha deraisa. The Rashi will know that that's a malacha of makabah patush. It's not a malacha bone. Okay. The third kasha was from the Gemara in Erevin. The Gemara speaks of a migdal shaleitz, a big piece of furniture that's made of wood. And the Gemara says it's a topic of binyan. The Gemara says the fair is binyan. The Gemara doesn't say makabah patush. So what's Rashi going to do with that Gemara? That the Gemara there doesn't say there's any machlekes Rabbi Shmuel. So the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Or HaZeruah, who writes to defend Rashi, that Gemara must be talking about a migdol, a wooden piece of furniture that's so big, it's machzik mem saw. What's the halacha machzik mem saw? So we usually assume that that's a din in Kabbalah's Tumah. It doesn't have anything to do with anything else. It's halacha in Kabbalah's Tumah that it cleats above the midah. The Gemara gives an example in Aron Kodesh. Usually, you leave an Aron Kodesh in one place. So the Gemara says, because it's a kliyetz ha'osei lenaches, it's normal. The nature of an Aron Kodesh is that it sits still. Lenaches means it sits still. Or any other piece of furniture that's so big, let's say sometimes a bookcase is machzik memsor. Memstor is the sheer memstor that Gemara has on the end of Sochim. Memstor is the amount of water that you need for a person to be tovel in. And how much is that? So the Gemara says, Amalama Barum Gimalam. It's 3 cubic amas. So a lot of times you have a tall bookcase that's Machzik Memstor. Means if you would measure the volume of the airspace with the thickness, that's Machlekes Bisham and Bisil in the Mishnah, we pass like Bisil with the thickness of the furniture. That's the whole thing measuring from the outside around and around, including the thickness of the furniture with the airspace inside, has 3 cubic amas. So then it's no longer. So then it's not makabel tuma. So Tosfos assumes not makabel tuma. What has it got to do with anything else? Who's interested in Kabbalah's tuma? So that's why Tosfos has a kasha against Rashi on mem dalet amud beis. The machlokes is Rashi and Tosfos in Hilchos Kabbalah's tuma. So the chidushi haran on daf mem dalet amud beis comes to defend Rashi, so he says, no. Rashi holds that the din that if it's machzik memso, it's not mekabel tuma. Not a chok, like you have klei glolim, klei avonim, klei adoma, there are certain kinds of kelim that are also not mekabel tuma because of the material. That's a kli, but it's a din, it's not mekabel tuma. But here, so Tyson says there are special dinim about such kelim, a kli which is not mekabel tuma, but it still maintains a din of a kli. It's still good, let's say, for netilus yadai. If you have a kli klolim, kli adoma, kli avonim, which is not mekabel tuma, but you can still do until sedaim. It does have a shein kli, or until sedaim is a din derabanan. Let's make it into a din. Let's talk about a din deraisa. It says when you have a person is a tumi meis, he can't just go to the mikveh and remove the tumi. Has to first have somebody sprinkle on him paraduma water, and then he's able to, after having the paraduma water sprinkled, hazosh, lishi shvi, then he can begin to go to the mikveh to become tor. Then the tefillah in the mikveh is going to help. So the par aduma water has to be, you have to have ashes from the par aduma, which is mixed with water in a kli. Maim chai mel keli. So you have to have a kli. So a kli has to have a shein kli. So the kli, the Mishnah say the kli can be from kli gulol and kli avon and kli adoma. Even a kli that's not mekabel tuma, that's called a kli. It's adin, it's not mekabel tuma. It has nothing to do with the shein kli. So here on them dalan and beis, the Kedusha Ran points out that there's a machlekes Rashi and Tosfos. What's the din if you have a kli etzabob emido? You have a gigantic wooden kli which is not mekabel tuma. So Tosfos says it's a kli. It's a din. It's not mekabel tuma, but it has a shein kli. And Rashi's opinion is it's not true. It has a shein ohel. It's not considered a kli at all. And that's how it says in the Rambam also. In the Rambam, I think it's in Hilchot Tumas Neis. The Rambam says that such gigantic kelim are not mekabel tuma. So the Rambam says, "Harei hein kaholim," as the status of an ohel.
What about exactly the din of the mikveh? If it's a very large kli, but we say it's not a kli,
yeah.
So it still be considered the kli
of
the din of
the mikveh? The Gemara has machlokes. The Gemara has a discussion. If you have heavy kelim, even if it's not so gigantic. If it's a heavy kli and it's also lenaches, even if it's not wood, the original din by Kabbalah's tumah really only is kliyets abob b'nida, but a kli mateches would be mekabel tumah even if it's very heavy. But the Gemara says that the laws of muksa were patterned after the din of the raisa called the tikkun rabbanan came the raisa tumah. Gemara says the laws of muksa were patterned after the din of the raisa of Kabbalah's tumah, that there are only four categories of things that are mekabel tumah. There's the other mekelim ochlum and mashkim, and anything that's not mekabel tumah because it doesn't fall under these four categories, other mekelim ochlum and mashkim, so that's considered muktzah. The chachamim made a din of muktzah. So the Gemara says they didn't make all the laws of muktzah. They wanted to prohibit handling muktzah lest someone will forget and carry it into the street. So they really should ask you from handling anything. You shouldn't be allowed to handle a sefer. You shouldn't be allowed to handle clothing, food, plates, chairs. You shouldn't be allowed to handle anything because anything you handle, you can carry into the street and violate Hotsu on anything. So Gemara says, no, that would make life impossible. They didn't want to make it impossible to be a Shema Shabbos. So they only wanted to make the Gzeira not to handle things in the house lest you forget and carry it into the street. And such things that don't really affect us too much. So what doesn't affect us? Junk. Something that's junk and it has no Shtamshis anyway. So that's the Yasid. So that's Eitzim, Abonim, the Ofor. Garbage, twigs, sand, something that has no Shtamshis at all. So how do they determine what's considered junk and what's not considered junk? So whatever is Mekabel Tumah is not considered junk. Whatever is not Mekabel Tumah doesn't fall under any one of the four categories. That's considered junk. So that's what they declared as Muktzah. The Gemara says the details of the Hilchas Muktzah don't conform 100% to the details of the Hilchas Kabbalah Tumah. Let's say Adam, a Nachri is not Mekabel Tumah. But still he's an Adam, so you don't say that all Nachrim in the world are junk and therefore is Muktzah. No, Nachri is Adam, Kalim, Klei Avonim, Klei Glolim, Klei Adam, not Mekabel Tumah. So he's going to say it's junk. No, it's not junk, it's Allah, it's not Mekabel Tumah. The Gemara has a discussion, the first daf in Kol Kisra, Kol HaKalim, to what extent did they carry over the details of Hilchas Kabbalah Tumah to the Muktzah, and to what extent not. Let's say Ochlam or Mashkin. Ochlam amashkim is only mekabel tumah if it's Michael Odom. If it's Michael Behemah, it's not mekabel tumah. But Michael Behemah is not muktzah on Shabbos. So it's roughly patterned after the dinim of Kabbalah tumah, but it's not 100%. So the Gemara has such a discussion. We have a din in Kabbalah tumah that if it's a very heavy kli, so it's not called a kli. Poshib Shat Gemara is like Rashi. It's not called a kli. Not that it's a kli, but it's a chok that it's not mekabel tumah. It's not called a kli. And if it's not called the kli, then it should carry over to muktzah. We should declare it as muktzah. The Gemara says, "Amachlekes." If you have heavy kelim, even if they're metal, even though in Hilchas Kabbalah Tumah this word of kli, osei lenaches, is only on wooden kelim, not on metal kelim. The Gemara says, maybe I should carry over the din that any kli that you're not normally in the practice of moving shouldn't have a din of kli with respect to muktzah, and they should all be considered muktzah. And there's a machlekes what the maskan is. Like the Rambam and other Rishonim, what the maskan is on heavy kelim, even if they're not made from wood. So the Yerzarua quoted by the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch comes to defend the Rashi from the third. He defends Rashi from all the kashas of Tosfos. The Tosfos three kashas was on Kuf Beis on the base. The third kasha was that the Gemara in Erevin, Daf Lamed Hei, says explicitly, you have a migdol shaleit, and the Gemara talks about breaking the migdol, so it's a shaila binyan estira. Binyan estira. So the favorite that there is binyan estira bekelim. So the Ozerua defends Rashi, says that must be talking about such a gigantic migdol, doesn't have to be so big. A lot of times we have bookcases that are machzik memsel. So if it's a large enough migdol, then it's called an ohel. So Rashi never meant to say that there's no binyan bekelim means tolish versus mechuber. No, Rashi never said there's only binyan be mechuber lekarka. There's binyan be tolish also. He just says bekelim. You don't call it binyan at all. Even if the manufacturer of brand new kli, you may declare that it's going to be makaba patish, but you're not going to declare that it's bonus. The Rashi held apparently that's what the Ozerua defends Rashi. Rashi held that Gemara must be talking about such a large migdol that's machzik. Migdol means a large kli that's machzik memso, so it has a shame ohel. It doesn't have a shame kli on it. Let's talk about Rashi holds a mem dalan on the base. And machzik memso is not just a chok and there is a kosov that it's not a kabbatumis. It's not a kabbatumis because we call it ohel, because we declare it that it's ohel. Then we had a line in Rashi that was a little unclear. The second wide line in the Rashi and Afayin Dalet on the days. Rashi says in manufacturing the chavis, he works out what the seven malachas are, which are the eight malachas in manufacturing an oven. So he says you should not include makab patish into the list of the seven malachas of manufacturing a chavis. Because the meileha nigmar malachta v'tan, and you put the chavis into the oven and you bake it out. You manufacture kli cheres. Meileha nigmar malachta v'tan. So what is he driving at? Does Rashi mean to say that even though afia is always korachach miyorvoy, I take raw food and I put it in the oven and it gets cooked, or it gets baked. I put the bread in and it gets baked. So that's always. And you have Zorah Baruch Mesayayit is Karachachim Yorabai. So perhaps Rashi means to say true Karachachim Yorabai applies to 38 malachas, but to the 39th malacha, Makam HaPatish, you got to do it yourself, and if you do it like Karachachim Yorabai, then you're not chayim. Is that what it means? Me'eleha nigmaro malachta b'tanur, that Karachachim Yorabai never applies to the malachas Makam HaPatish. Sounds like a chiddush. Or it could be that Rashi is driving at a different kavana. It could be that what he means to say is along the lines of the Me'iri. There is a Mechudish, there are a lot of Mechudish Dik and Me'iri. So the Me'iri has one of his Chidushim and the topic of Makab HaPatish. He says Makab HaPatish means when you have a Kli which is functional and then you put on the finishing touches. Let's say somebody else manufactured a pitcher and I put on the design, and I'm not going to sell the pictures until I have a design, because the customers won't want to buy it. Or any kli like that. You made a kli, which is functional, then you put on this. The Gemara talks about Makam HaPatish. Someone made a mat, and then someone put on the fancy design on the edge. So that would be Makab HaPatish. But the one who manufactures the kli, the Miri holds that that's not called Makab HaPatish. So that could be what Rashi is driving at. Avakal b'chavis leka Makab HaPatish, the Me'leh, Nigma HaMalach Tavetan, it doesn't mean so much Me'leh as opposed to the Adayim versus Korach Achmi Urboi. Maybe what he means is, it's Nigma HaMalach Tavetan, it becomes functional when you put it in the oven, but he didn't put any finishing touches on it. The Gemara is just talking about making the chavis itself. Making a chavis, which is lacking finishing touches, that's not called Makab HaPatish. Makab HaPatish is only the finishing touch. Whichever way you should read the Rashi, Rashi is saying something important here. We're just not sure exactly what he's driving at. Then on this topic of Binyan B'Kelim, the Machlokes, Rashi and Tosfos, we had the Gemara later that if one is Oseh Pesach, if you make a Pesach in a Kli, so that's a Malacha. or you make it, even though it's a Pesach, if you have a pus pimple, you make a Pesach, Hase Lachnas Lahotzi, the Gemara says, sometimes that will constitute a Melocha Deraisa. What Melocha is it exactly when you make a Pesach? Say Rashi on Shabbos and in Sukkos and in other places. Rashi always writes there are two possibilities. Either it's a Melocha Makaba Patish, or it's a Melocha Bona. If it's Bona, how can you have Binyan Ba'odam? If there's no Binyan Ba'kelim, how do you have Binyan Ba'odam? So we had the Mishnah later quotes the Machlekes Hatanayim. One Tana certainly holds that there's Binyan Ba'odam. He says that the Rav Leizer says that one who braids, if a woman braids her hair, Obizman is that you have men who are braiding the hair. Okay. The Rambam talks about a Nazir braiding his hair. Nazir has long, long hair. He says Nazir is never allowed to enter the Beis HaMikdash, because you're not allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash Paru HaRosh. The Rambam says if he braids his hair, then it's not called Paru HaRosh. Just because you didn't take your haircut in a long, long time doesn't cause that you call Paru HaRosh. It's only if the hair is sloppy. But if you braid the hair, then the Nazir is allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara talks about one who braids hair on Shabbos. The Reb Leizer in the Mishnah on Daf Tzadik Daled Amud Bei says that that's a Melocha Deraisa of Bona. And the Gemara says, how do you know that it's Binyan Ba'adam? So the Gemara digs up the Pasuk, Vayiven Hashem Elokim Es Hatzela. And the verb Vayiven indicates that the Binyan applies to Adam. Then the Gemara says, the Chachamim disagree. So what point exactly did the Chachamim dispute? They hold that there's no Binyan Ba'adam. And that pasuk does mean that Vayiven Hashem Elokim Es Hatzela is not Miloshen Binyan, but rather Miloshen Havana. Bini Yisera Nasan Nasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Leisha Yosem and Uish. That's what it sounds like in the Gemara Nida on Daf Mem Hei Amud Beis, when the Gemara says that a girl becomes Bas Mitzvah at the age of 12 and a boy becomes Bas Mitzvah at the age of 13. So the Gemara bases it on this pasuk Bini Yisera. The Gemara sounds like it's presenting that it's a Machlekes Hatanaim. How do you translate the word Vayiven? Is Vayiven Miloshen Binyan? Even as Miloshen Havonim. So that's a question. Rashi is not so convinced that the Chachamim, the Reb Shimon, the Chachamim, the Reb Leizer, disagree on the whole premise of Reb Leizer. It could be that they are masking with Reb Leizer that there is Binyan Ba'odom based on the pasuk Vayiven Hashem Elokim Es Hatzela. They just hold that braiding the hair is not Binyan, but if you make Oysa Pesach Ba'odom, that would be Binyan. It's again a problem. If Rashi holds that there's no binyan the kalim, so why is the binyan the other? So the answer is, but you have a pasuk. Rashi's shita is not that there's only binyan b'mechuvah lekarka. It doesn't mean to say b'di adam hukshe lekarkois. That's not why. Rashi just means the verb binyan doesn't fit in by kalim. It only fits in by either oholim. The ohol doesn't necessarily have to be mechuvah lekarka. If you have a migdol god, a migdol shalei, it says masig mem so. That would also be an ohal. Or by Yodam. In biblical Hebrew it says by Yidin, so there's binyan by Yodam. The difficulty with Rashi Shita was that Megabein. The Gemara says on Tzadikim and Aleph, Megabein Mishum Mai Chayiv. The Gemara says Chay Mishum Bona. Chay means that's their Raisa. So where do you have a pasuk in Tanakh? That Megabein, one who makes cheese, is referred to as an act of binyan. You see that you don't have to have any psukim. So why shouldn't there be binyan b'kelim? Why is gvina mochama than kelim? But the gvina was problematic anyway. I had headaches with the gvina without this rash. Not so sure how to deal with the gvina even without that. Okay. So tomorrow I think we'll complete the Olachazar. We're not going to chazar every month. Tomorrow we finish with the Chazar. So we got to take a vote. When are people interested in having this midterm? Tomorrow is Monday. So believe that we should finish. Okay. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. How many people interested in having the Bechina on Tuesday? Okay. Okay. How many people interested in having the Bechina on Wednesday? Almost unanimous. No, Thursday, next week. Who wants Thursday? What, most people want it next week? Sunday? How many people want the Bechina on Sunday? Is that a majority? And what's a better day to, who proposed a better date than next Sunday? Next Monday. More people would prefer next Monday than next